Thanks for being here tonight while we young people conduct the service. It's not that funny. We're going to read from Samuel. And some things I just want you to be thinking about as these young men read, and then I'll speak for just a moment, but not long. One, we're going to see how far Saul has drifted from what God had called him to, and his finding favor with God. We're going to just see how depraved really Saul becomes in this passage. And you may know it, but just notice that as we read. And then to see the quality of the friendship and the character of his son Jonathan in this 20th chapter that we read, that's something that you're probably going to be more familiar with. But knowing that his father is angry with David and is actually out to kill David, how Jonathan responds to that. And I'll remind you, as we read this, remember that who is the logical to follow Saul as king? It's Jonathan. And so when Jonathan really kind of goes against his father and has this friendship and warns David, this is not only a friendship and it's not only kind of going against his father, but he's actually helping someone who is his rival for the throne, which speaks a lot to Jonathan and his character, because it's not just about helping a friend, but it's about his own future as well, which I think is very interesting. Something else that's interesting as we read this is you'll see the significance of the defeat of Goliath in these passages. And if you ever ask yourself what happened to Goliath's instruments of war, well, we're going to find out in this reading, which is interesting. And something else to keep in mind as we read about that, and it's not going to be, I don't believe it's in the reading that we set out tonight, but we're used to being able to go to the hardware store and buy implements and buy all kinds of metal things. It's pretty common, right? We can get them, and now you don't even have to go somewhere. We can get on Amazon, they'll be here in the morning, or maybe tonight before we go to bed. But metal especially was highly valued in at this time, not as popular, and those who could work it. And so to keep your enemy from having weapons of war, you would restrict what we would call blacksmiths, folks from metalworking. You would restrict the metal they had. And so you're going to find that Israel actually is taking the goads that they use for the oxen that would have a metal tip. They're sharpening those. And what do we see as times change? That the swords will be beat into plowshares, right? Well, Israel actually takes their plowshares and sharpens them as instruments of war because they don't have swords. And so as we read about this and kind of what goes on, look at it against that backdrop, because it's very different than what we're used to. Those things were very limited and highly priced and highly prized. So we're going to read about Jonathan and David and about Saul and David and those relationships.
This is 1 Samuel 20. Then David fled from Naioth at Ramah and went to Jonathan and asked, "What have I done? What is my crime? How have I wronged your father that he is trying to take my life?" "Never," Jonathan replied. "You are not going to die. Look, my father doesn't do anything great or small without confiding in me. Why would he hide this from me? It's not so." But David took an oath and said, "Your father knows very well that I have found favor in your eyes, and he has said to himself, 'Jonathan must not know this, or he will be grieved.' Yet as surely as the Lord lives and as you live, there's only a step between me and death." Jonathan said to David, "Whatever you want to do, I'll do for you." So David said, "Look, tomorrow is the new moon festival, and I'm supposed to dine with the king. But let me go and hide in the field until the evening of the day after tomorrow. If your father misses me at all, tell him, 'David earnestly asked my permission to hurry to Bethlehem, his hometown, because an annual sacrifice is being made there for his whole clan.' If he says, "Very well," then your servant is safe. But if he loses his temper, you can be sure that he is determined to harm me. As for you, show kindness to your servant, for you have brought him into a covenant with you before the Lord. If I am guilty, then kill me yourself. Why hand me over to your father? Never, Jonathan said. If I had the least inkling that my father was determined to harm you, wouldn't I tell you? David asked, "Who will tell me if your father answers you harshly?" "Come," Jonathan said, "let's go into the field." So they went there together. Then Jonathan said to David, "By the Lord, the God of Israel, I will surely sound out my father by this time the day after tomorrow. If he is favorably disposed toward you, will I not send you word and let you know? But if my father is inclined to harm you, may the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if I do not let you know and send you away safely. May the Lord be with you as he has been with my father. But show me unfailing kindness like that of the Lord as long as I live, so that I may not be killed. And do not ever cut off your kindness from my family, not even when the Lord has cut off every one of David's enemies from the face of the earth." So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, "May the Lord call David's enemies into account." And Jonathan had David reaffirm his oath out of love for him, because he loved him as he loved himself. Then Jonathan said to David, "Tomorrow is a new moon festival. You will be missed because your seat will be empty. The day after tomorrow, toward evening, go to the place where you hid when this trouble began, and wait by the stone Ezel. I will shoot 3 arrows to the side of it, as though I were shooting at a target. Then I will send a boy and say, 'Go find the arrows.' If I say to him, 'Look, the arrows are on this side of you, bring them here,' then come, because as surely as the Lord lives, you are safe. There is no danger. But if I say to the boy, 'Look, the arrows are beyond you,' then you must go, because the Lord has sent you away. And about the matter you and I discussed, remember, the Lord is witness between you and me forever." So David hid in the field, and when the new moon festival came, the king sat down to eat. He sat at his customary place by the wall, opposite Jonathan, and Abner sat next to Saul, but David's place was empty. Saul said nothing that day, for he thought, "Something must have happened to David to make him ceremonially unclean. Surely he is unclean." But the next day, the second day of the month, David's place was empty again. Then Saul said to his son Jonathan, "Why hasn't the son of Jesse come to the meal either yesterday or today?" Jonathan answered, "David earnestly asked me for permission to go to Bethlehem. He said, 'Let me go because our family is observing a sacrifice in the town, and my brother has ordered me to be there. If I found favor in your eyes, let me get away to see my brothers.' That is why he has not come to the king's table." Saul's anger flared up at Jonathan, and he said to him, "You son of a perverse and rebellious woman, don't I know that you have sided with the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of the mother who bore you? As long as the son of Jesse lives on this earth, neither you nor your kingdom will be established. Now send and bring him to me, for he must die." "Why should he be put to death? What has he done?" Jonathan asked his father. But Saul hurled a spear at him to kill him. Then Jonathan knew that his father intended to kill David. Jonathan got up from the table in fierce anger. On that second day of the month, he did not eat because he was grieved at his father's shameful treatment of David. In the morning, Jonathan went out to the field for his meeting with David. He had a small boy with him, and he said to the boy, "Run and find the arrows I shoot." As the boy ran, he shot an arrow beyond him. When the boy came to the place where Jonathan's arrow had fallen, Jonathan called out after him, "Isn't the arrow beyond you?" Then he shouted, "Hurry, go quickly, don't stop." The boy picked up the arrow and returned to his master. The boy knew nothing of all this, only Jonathan and David knew. Then Jonathan gave his weapons to the boy and said, "Go, carry them back to town." After the boy had gone, David got up from the south side of the stone and bowed down before Jonathan 3 times, with his face to the ground. Then they kissed each other and wept together, but David wept the most. Jonathan said to David, "Go in peace, for we have sworn friendship to each other in the name of the Lord, saying, 'The Lord is witness between you and me, and between your descendants and my descendants forever.'" Then David left, and Jonathan went back to the town.
I'll be reading 1 Samuel 21. David went to Nob to Amalek the priest. Amalek trembled when he met him and asked, "Why are you alone? Why is no one with you?" David answered Amalek the priest, "The king sent me on a mission and said to me, no one is to know anything about the mission I am sending you on. As for my men, I have told them to meet me at a certain place. Now then, what do you have on hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread or whatever you can find. But the priest answered David, I don't have any ordinary bread on hand. However, there is some consecrated bread here, provided the men have kept themselves from women. David replied, indeed, women have been kept from us, as usual, whenever I set out. The men's bodies are holy, even on missions that are not holy. How much more so today? So the priest gave him the consecrated bread. Since there was no bread there except the bread of the presence that had been removed from before the Lord and replaced by hot bread on the day it was taken away. Now one of Saul's servants was there that day, detained before the Lord. He was Doeg the Edomite, Saul's chief shepherd. David asked Amalek, don't you have a spear or a sword here? I haven't brought my sword or any other weapons because the king's mission was urgent. The priest replied, the sword of Goliath the Philistine, whom you killed in the valley of Elah, is here. It is wrapped in cloth behind the ephod. If you want it, take it. There is no sword here but the one. David said, there is none like it. Give it to me.
Now Samuel heard that David's men had been discovered, and Samuel was seated, spear in hand, under a tamarisk tree on the hill of Gibeah, with all his officials standing at his side. He said to them, listen, men of Benjamin, will the son of Jesse give you all of you fields and vineyards? Will he make all of you commanders of thousands and commanders of hundreds? Is that why you all have conspired against me? No one tells me when my son makes a covenant with the son of Jesse. None of you is concerned about me or tells me that my son has incited my servant to lie in wait for me as he does today. But Doeg the Edomite, who was standing with Saul's official, said, I saw the son of Jesse come to Amalek, son of Atub at Nob. Amalek inquired of the Lord for him. He also gave his provisions and the sword of Goliath the Philistine. Then the king sent for the priest Amalek, son of Atub, and all the men of his family, who were the priest at Nob, and they all came to the king. Saul said, listen now, son of Atub. Yes, my lord, he answered. Saul said to him, why have you conspired against me, you and the son of Jesse, giving him bread and a sword and inquiring of God for him, so that he has rebelled against me and lies in wait for me as he does today? Amalek answered the king, who of all your servants is as loyal as David, the king's son-in-law, captain of your bodyguard, a highly respected in your household? Was that day the first time I inquired of God for him? Of course not.
I will be reading from 1 Samuel 22. Let not the king accuse your servant or any of his father's family, for your servant knows nothing at all about this whole affair. But the king said, you will surely die, Amalek, you and your whole family. Then the king ordered the guards at his side, turn and kill the priests of the Lord, because they too have sided with David. They knew he was fleeing, yet they did not tell. But they did not tell me. But the king's officials were unwilling to raise a hand to strike the priests of the Lord. The king then ordered Doeg, you turn and strike down the priest. So Doeg the Edomite turned and struck them down. That day he killed 85 men who wore the linen ephod. He also put to the sword Nob, the town of the priest, with its men and women, its children and infants, and its cattle, donkeys, and sheep. But one son of Amalek, son of Ahitub, named Abathar, escaped and fled to join David. He told David that Saul had killed the priest of the Lord. Then David said to Abathar, that day when Doeg the Edomite was there, I knew he would be sure to tell Saul, I am responsible for the death of your whole family. Stay with me, don't be afraid. The man who wants to kill you is trying to kill me too. You will be safe with me.
An interesting reading. What do we know about David in contrast to what Saul thought and who Saul was? David will soon have an opportunity to kill Saul, and he will not, because he said he is God's anointed and he will refuse to kill Saul. So this paranoia that Saul has that David is going to kill him is certainly misguided. David has no intention of ever killing Saul, not because of his respect for Saul, because of his understanding that God had put Saul in the place that he was in, and it was not David's place to remove him. So Saul is just wrong about that. But you notice here that Saul actually tries to kill Jonathan and is not successful. Something that's always been interesting to me, if David and Jonathan are going to talk, I don't know why they did the arrow shooting deal. Why didn't they just go out there and say, David, get out of here, or David, come back home with me? Not for me to know, but as I read these things, I have to ask these questions. But it is interesting. But you see that they had kept, obviously, Goliath's sword at the temple because it was, the tabernacle, because it was important. It would certainly have been something you would have kept because we still talk about this great battle, right? And it certainly would have been a great battle for them. And so David then takes that sword because he has gone off of that one. Plus, they're very limited. I'm sure David had one, but if you'll read prior, as I mentioned earlier, they are extremely limited. But look what Saul does in having the priest killed. I mean, that's pretty radical. Because, you know, even in our society today, there's still some respect, or at least has been, some respect for the church, even among some of our rougher folks. But Saul has all of them killed because he is so eaten up with hatred and anger and jealousy and suspicion that he is pretty much out to get everybody. It is crumbling. And is he now at all effective as a leader? As we read this, was his military willing to carry out his orders? They absolutely refused to carry out his orders. And so it is another man of low character that kills those priests and actually wipes out a whole city of people who had nothing to do with that. So it shows you where Saul had gone in his depravity, which is really a shame, a man who had been chosen by God to lead but was unable to do that. What happens at the end of the day for Saul? He loses the kingdom, right? Saul loses the kingdom. The one thing he's trying to hold on to is power and life and position, and he's going to lose it. And David is going to receive that place, not because David is going to kill him, not because David is plotting against him, not because David is planning an insurrection, but because Saul is going to serve at God's will, right? And so that's going to be removed for him. So all of the struggle, all of the things he did to try to hold on were not productive for him. And those things are really true for us today. We should, as we talked about this morning, be dependent on God and walk in his ways because God's will is going to be done. God's will is going to be done always. And so we should be about seeking God's will and walking in his ways. And it's very liberating because do we always have to be in defense of ourselves? No. God will take care of us, won't he? Saul was unable to protect himself, but David realizes his protection comes from God. That God is his rock and his fortress, his refuge, his ever-present help in times of troubles, David would say. And so, again, it's a great lesson for us to learn to trust God, whether we're individuals or a nation, because God is the one who delivers. Again, God has made the way for us to find forgiveness and eternal life. And if you need to respond, do that while we stand and sing.